Everyone,
I am Bill S. Preston, Esquire.
And I am Ted Theodore Logan, and we are
Wild Stallions!
That's right, this week we are watching Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure from 1989, directed by Stephen Herrick. Those of you who may be among the younger of our audience may not know what this is. Actually, I asked a coworker today when he knows that we have a podcast. Instead of, you watched Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, he goes, I've never even heard of it. At which point I went into a private room and cried for 45 minutes at how old I am. So this is a movie about a couple of underachieving aspiring musicians who end up on a time travel adventure thanks to George Carlin and the phone booth. Would that be an accurate description, John?
Yes.
Perfect.
I've never even heard of this movie either. What is this, some sort of comedy show?
Yep. It was an SNL skit, I think, wouldn't it?
Yeah, with that guy with the dark hair and the mm-hmm. guy with the blonde hair and the glasses, and he played drums and
yep.
I like to play.
Oh, wait, hold on, no.
And they were like, excellent.
Wait, we did that one.
Uh-oh, we've done this one?
We did that one. This is a different one.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is different than Wayne's World?
Believe it or not.
Oh man, we're going to have to test this out.
We are going to have to test this out.
So this is kind of like a postmodern Odd Couple for the older folks who are listening.
I mean, I guess you could say that in the sense that it does involve two lead
people.
Male roles.
Period. Yeah, I'm just, I don't know what else to say. It's so funny that we'd come into Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and it would fill this kind of mysterious void of time where there are a generation of people that had just slipped past, and yet here we are able to embrace it and love it and even look upon the third coming at sometime relatively soon, I believe.
The next year, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and it's been such a long time, and it was just a whole lot of fun and a movie I enjoyed so much. And in fact, we joke about the parallels between this and Wayne's World. I don't really think content wise that it feels anything at all the same. It just happens to have two leading men who play these, you know, parts off each other and stuff like that. Like, but I think we're going to find a very different experience getting back into this. First of all, it's historical, you know, so it's going to be very educational, and I think it's going to help us remember our roots.
Yeah, I agree with you on like the I think the parallels sort of begin and end with the sort of the way that they talk and interact with each other. The rest of the movie is very, very different, but it has a lot of really neat concepts. Like I loved the idea of taking all these historical figures and piling them into this phone booth, and then releasing them into a mall, and let's just see what they do. I remember in particular like Napoleon and how they didn't want to hang out with Napoleon, so they were just like, let's leave him with my little brother, and then they go to water slides and eat ice cream with Napoleon. I thought that was neat.
Yeah, I particularly remember I've always been fascinated with the concept of time travel and reading Jules Verne and reading all these sci-fi books when I was younger. And then when you get to TV shows and movies, quite often I felt just kind of ripped off because they would just make proclamations about time travel that made no sense. And they would just skip past any problems with time travel, any kind of inconsistencies or things that would pop up. But in Bill and Ted's, they even play with it and they laugh at it. And like when they're trying to plan things and it's like, oh, but wait, but what if later we go and we travel back in time again and we leave the keys here and we do, you know, like, and like once they think about it and they think they're going to do it, then it happens. And then the results are there. And it's like, it just was a lot of fun. I don't remember all the details, but even at that time when I was younger, I just thought that was a lot of fun, those mental gymnastics of like, would that actually work or is that not how it would work?
No, but I remember that being really well done. Like, you know, you brought up a great point, like leaving the keys behind the fence post. Like, oh, got to remember to get the keys for my dad. Oh, but where do we leave them? Right here. And he just picks up the keys from behind the, you know, the signpost or wherever they're standing.
Yeah.
But they do it really, really well. And it's consistent. And I mean, obviously there's a ton of like science fiction to it rather than hard science, but it's what you would imagine time travel to be. And other movies can do it too in different forms and fashions. Like you have the Terminator where, you know, they send back somebody each time and the timeline is different. But I think that even today, you know, in the past 10 years, you've had TV shows and movies that have dealt in and with time travel and have done it pretty well. A couple of instances in particular that I can think of would be like Continuum or The Travelers. Like those both do it really, yep, really well. Continuum, a sci-fi original. Travelers, a Netflix original, if any of you are interested in checking those out. But I mean, dealing with time travel back, you know, when we were kids and maybe even earlier, say like 65 to 95 or whatever, you know, you would end up with these sort of hokey ideas of how time travel would work and they wouldn't account for paradoxes and things like that. Except for in a few instances, like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and The Terminator and maybe like Back to the Future.
Yeah, just a bit. Like each of them have their, like they touch on and they have the, they don't really get into it because they know the harder they get into the science in quotes, the harder it is to explain certain paradoxes, like you said, or, you know, you can't, it's hard to deal with causal and causality and time loops and linear time. If, you know, if you have like multiple dimensions and things break apart every time you do something differently, that's easy enough. But when you're trying to say this is all recursive and follows the same plot of line and any action will have an impact both, you know, forward and ripple backwards. And like all of that stuff becomes super complicated the more you do. And, you know, it just becomes something where the more detailed you get, the more explanations you have to provide if you want to maintain it. And anyway, I could go on and on. But the point is that they have fun with it and they kind of wink at it, but they also, they don't ignore it either. And so it's a lot of fun. I can't wait to experience just the goofiness of the movie itself, but also just kind of like look back and see how they handled things with that time travel and not like burn my brain out on it, but just kind of have fun and see what they did.
Yeah, no, I can't wait either, actually. So why don't we pause here? John and I are going to watch this. You guys are welcome to watch along with us. We're watching this from our personal libraries. I don't know that it's available for streaming on any particular service for free right now. So you're either going to watch it from your personal library or you're going to rent it. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the more finite details of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. John, are you ready?
John? Oh, that's right.
Sorry. I mean, Ted, are you ready?
I'm ready, Bill.
Then let's go.
All right. Excellent. That was my Keanu Reeves as Ted Theodore Logan impression. Just in case the folks were worried, we were just talking and having fun. Now I've put in a good 43 hours of practice this week to get that nailed. So let's go.
Everyone, let's talk about some Bill and Ted here. John, usually, although the last few episodes you kind of bucked that trend, you will kind of tell us what you thought of the movie.
Is that a command?
No. Would you let me finish? God.
So let me go ahead and tell you. No, I'm just kidding. I was going to jump in and do the
damn
thing.
Damn it. I'm going to just kind of sort of take up that torch here and so far as I want to say that this movie is a lot of fun as long as you don't think too hard about it.
See, I was going to say my first reaction was, I almost want to go back and listen to what we recorded for our first segment, because I think we might have been a little too praiseworthy about how they handle time travel in this movie.
I do too.
Because it's all because nonsense.
Because there's some fucking holes
it's just,
there.
It's ridiculous. It's just, I mean, they're having fun with it, and that's fine, there's nothing smart about this. It's just, you know, they just fill in the gaps wherever it felt like it, and I mean, you could tell that they wrote the screenplay in 4 days. It's pretty evident.
Oh, sure.
So it's there's no question what we're dealing with here, you know, and it's
not at all.
It's not great.
No, I mean, if you apply like normally accepted science fiction time travel conventions, the entire time travel plot just falls apart once you realize that the entire Wild Stallion's future is predicated on Rufus returning to the past. So it's all just a loop. It's an endless loop, a 700-year loop.
It's all a big cock swallop.
Yeah. That word that you said.
Yeah, it's definitely a real word.
I believe you. What was weird to me about the time travel thing is that time is basically constant relative to the traveler, and the travelers have to return to the point where they belong instead of the point where they returned from or where they left, except at the end of Bill and Ted 2, spoiler for everyone, because at the end of Bill and Ted 2, they're like, hey, we still don't know how to play our instruments. Hold on, we'll be right back. And then they come back and they can play their instruments. So it's like...
Well, and there was the whole idea of time being generally flexible except San Dimas time, and that was fixed, and that's why they had to watch their time, you know, on their watch to make sure they're there for the presentation, because it's not like if they're 5 minutes late for the presentation they can hop in and go 5 minutes back and then be there on time.
Right.
But then they decided they would do all these things afterwards. So they just lined up an entire plot full of things to do after they do their presentation. And as long as these two very responsible young men do all of the different things in the future, don't forget any of them, which they've already established they're totally incapable of, then everything will work out the way it's supposed to. And then they kind of have that like, but what if we don't do it? But I guess we did, because now everything's fine.
Right.
It's like, okay, yep, cool.
It's all, again, if you don't think too hard about it, it's fine. It's fun. It's goofy, and, you know, you can sort of ride that wave. If you start digging too deep, you start to find where all those holes are, even in the so-called, you know, there's no real science behind time travel because it's theoretically impossible. But like
says you,
it says me, right? But were it possible, I think that there are a lot of movies that do it a whole lot better.
Yeah, there's a reason in Avengers Endgame when they're bringing up all the different movies to validate their own time travel theories, they don't mention Bill and Ted.
Right.
That's an observation that I actually stole from one Bill Randall, who said that about how they processed information. And I had to agree, you know.
Bill's a hard guy to argue with. We need to have him on the show.
Yeah. Or he's... Wait, never mind. I have no response to that. but yeah, so yeah, the show itself, though, you know, you're talking about how it's fun when you don't think about it. I definitely think when we're talking about that intersection of nostalgia and fun, you know, and letting go of, you know, the content of the movies and not wanting it to be too much in and of itself, that's where you get to the point where I think anyone can have fun with this movie. And by anyone, I mean maybe anyone over the age of 30. I wonder, you know, if someone watched this now who'd just never seen it before and they're like, you know, in their teens or late 20s or early 20s, like, would they get anything out of it? I don't know. Had your son seen this movie?
I thought he had. And then... Like, he came downstairs. I was probably 15 minutes into the movie last night, and he came down and just started hanging out and watching it with me. But he seemed pretty engaged in it, and I was like, you've seen this before, right? And he goes, no, I don't think so. I'm like, all right, well, you know, hang out and watch the movie. He was pretty into it throughout the whole thing. I don't think that he he gives it the same sort of analytical eye that you or I might. I think he just sort of goes with the flow of whatever he's watching. Although there are some things that we've watched and he goes, "Dad, that's fucking stupid." But no, he seemed into it. I don't know that he got the same stuff out of it, like you were saying, that we would have gotten out of it.
But it's funny, though, watching it again now, I realize a lot of the little in-jokes and slightly more mature jokes, not necessarily like in terms of content being, you know, not for kids, but just meaning a little more advanced connections. You have to know a little bit more about history and things to, like, when I watched this, you know, when I was a kid, like, I didn't make these connections of, you know, Napoleon going to a water park named
Waterloo.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh, that's funny. Or, you know, they go to the mall and Sigmund Freud comes walking out holding a corn dog while he's talking, you know, and just like swinging around. And it's like, okay, this is funny. The connections and the visual little jokes that, you know, mean nothing at all, but are like, okay, that's actually surprisingly a little bit clever. So that was kind of fun. But I do think overall, I really do have to say that Napoleon was my favorite part of the movie.
Oh, for sure. He was so,
he carried the humor
so
for me,
funny
like
in this.
Just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous,
buddy.
But a lot of fun. yeah. So
you talked about like Sigmund Freud and Napoleon, and there were some history things that I think that they were a little off on too. One big one for
a little.
Me, well, more than a little, but one big one for me was Beethoven. They took him from 1810. But he went deaf in 1798.
And then he jumped in playing extreme on a synthesizer.
Right. And like the dude in the piano store is like, "Well, check this out." And he presses the button and it's just playing. And Beethoven is delighted by this, but how you can't hear it, obviously, because you're deaf. So,
well, they never said he heard it. Maybe he just liked the little light that flashed when he hit the button.
Okay, well, that's fair, but like, he's still playing on synthesizers. He doesn't know what sounds they're making.
Yeah, it's like this movie did not do enough fact-checking.
No, well, like you said, you know, they probably wrote this in 4 days, so
yep.
You gotta give him a little leeway, I guess, in the historical accuracy department.
But the continuity thing, like, of course they have to have that thing where, you know, they don't know the languages, they're all crammed in a magical phone booth, and they're just accepting it, and Ted and Theodore are their masters for the moment, and they're cool with it. Like we have to accept Genghis Khan just going along with it for the most part. Like, that's a little bit, you know, weird. Like, all that stuff's weird, but what's really weird to me is that idea of shock and surprise, and I don't know who these people are. It's like, if you're Abraham Lincoln, you've heard of Napoleon before.
Right.
You know, these aren't a bunch of straight, like, it wouldn't, you know, there, I think there'd be some different interactions from people who understand, you know, I don't expect Genghis Khan to know who anyone else is, you know, but like, so it was just very interesting to me, like how they played off each other, but it's like, you gotta have that campy 80s comedy quality where they're all just crammed together and screaming and running around and all this stuff, but it was fun having, you know, Billy the Kid and Socrates team up and stuff like that.
Yes.
So.
I would say if Napoleon is the funniest part of this movie, the best sort of buddy trope would be Billy and Socrates.
Yeah.
I think that they played very well off of each other. They did the whole, like, you know, teaming up to save them from medieval England and stuff like that. It was really cool.
And going after the chicks in the mall.
Yes.
Good times.
You know, we keep coming back to the mall. The mall montage was one of the best parts of the movie, with the whole musical bit and sort of jumping from pair to pair, or from sort of historical figure to historical figure. You have Joan of Arc like taking over the aerobics class, and you got Genghis Khan just destroying this sporting goods store and like rolling through the mall on a skateboard with a baseball bat and a football helmet. Like the entire
Joan of
bit.
Arc teaching aerobics.
Yeah, did I say that one? I thought I said that one.
Well, I said it again.
Well, okay. No, I think that that whole bit was pretty much like the best part of the movie for me, with maybe the exception of like their final report at the end.
I thought they'd at some point. I thought I was going to remember they were going to break into like the Breakfast Club dance, but I don't think they did that.
No, I don't.
But they could have. It would have fit in.
Yeah, it totally would have fit in. But I don't think that was.
You didn't watch the extended cut?
No, that must have been where I missed it.
So here's the whole thing about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I'm going to break it down for you. Ready for this?
Yep.
Bill and Ted did not time travel. Bill and Ted got high and went around gathering homeless people, dressed them up in wigs and such, and dragged them onto their high school stage. This is all in their heads. It's all fake. I mean, I'm not saying fake because it's like doesn't follow continuity. I'm saying fake meaning they actually got a bunch of homeless people and crammed them into a phone booth. And they were just like, no, shut up. You're from history. And, you know, and so like when they come out on stage, it's not that these are people who are speaking foreign languages. They're just mumbling and you know, and they're interpreting in quotes everything they're saying. And, you know, so it's really there's a lot of a different take on what this film really is.
So in that case, is Rufus like a grifter who?
Oh, yeah. Flim Flam Man. He sold him he sold them the phone booth, probably, I'm guessing.
Wow, that blows my mind a bit.
I mean, it just makes the most sense, I feel. And that all this, the trouble and hardship with their family, this is just how they escape that. It's all just a mental break, a drug-fueled mental break. I mean, wait till you hear my thoughts on The Bogus Journey. That really all happens while Ted's in Alaska at military camp.
Well, I think we'll save that for
of course
for its own episode. Speaking of Rufus, rest in peace, George Carlin. I miss him a lot. He was one of my favorite comedians.
I thought you'd say he's one of your best friends.
Well, that too. I mean, we were pretty close.
I could see that.
We drifted apart before the end. There was some bad blood.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna do a George Carlin hologram for Bill and Ted Face the Music,
God,
but we'll see.
I hope not. I'm just glad they're not like trying to reboot it with different actors or something.
Yeah, maybe they could just.
That's something
maybe
I'm getting
they can
real
use,
sick of with Hollywood is rebooting everything. Like let's have an original idea for 5 fucking seconds.
I mean, before we get to an original idea, let's do the trend that has been going on lately, and they could just use some of that de-aging technology to get George Carlin back into the film. Is that how that works?
Yeah, it's like a deep fake thing.
Or yeah, just like turn back time enough to where he looks like he's alive still. I don't know how that works. Yeah. It's technology. I don't understand. They'll figure it out.
Yeah. Ask your IT guy. He can explain it to you.
I mean, they make Robert Downey Jr. look like a little young Robert Downey Jr. It works out.
Sure it does. Actually, Marvel did do that really well with you know, Robert Downey Jr. And they did it with, what's his
Abraham
name?
Abraham Lincoln?
Yep. No. In
Will Smith?
In Guardians 2.
Willow Smith.
Yeah, that's it. Moving along. Because I'm not going to remember this actor's name, and I'm not going to look it up right now.
And I'm definitely not going to help you out by just telling you that it's Kurt Russell.
Oh, God damn it, Kurt Russell. Shit. Yes, Kurt Russell.
So you think the mall, I guess, it almost feels like the mall was more of the final scene than even the presentation at the end, just in terms of the triumphant, you know, crazy funness just breaking out.
Yeah, but obviously, like, they run into trouble at the end and everybody gets arrested and they have to go get broken out of the police station, but it's
Dad, I'm back here. Ted? No, keep coming.
It's over here.
And he just, you know, for 5 minutes, he keeps slowly approaching a bookshelf. Are you on the bookshelf, Ted?
It's a great
I'm not going to turn around and look.
He's a great cop. He's a, you know.
Yeah.
investigative genius Mr. Logan or Officer Logan.
Yeah. We've all had those moments though.
One thing that I sort of took note of, Bill and Ted aren't total idiots. I had this memory of them being just these sort of imbeciles, throughout, you know, ever since the first time I watched it. But, the only class they're failing is history, which tells me that they've at least got a handle on math and English and science. So I don't think that they're complete morons. Bill is obviously the smarter of the two because he comes up with all the ideas.
But Ted's the one that decides maybe they should take guitar lessons.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the one good idea that he had at the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
they do run a lot of risks, though, with their sort of time travel. They got time travel down as a tool pretty quickly, but... like, especially with returning the historical figures back to their times with the knowledge of, you know, 1988 and the technology of their own respective futures. Like,
I think they returned him?
I mean, I would assume so, because they continued to be historical figures after that.
How do you know?
Because we have records of most of those people's... Dads?
Oh, are you thinking that Bill and Ted was an actual documentary, and because in real life now we know that information, that it's real?
No, nope, that happened. But it sounds like you do.
You think that? Come on! In Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, they get done with the presentation at the gym, and they go celebrate at the water park. Because what else? Where would you go if you had one place to go to celebrate passing history? Of course, you'd go to Waterloo. And so they went there, left them. And then they went back to the garage, and then they got the magical princesses to show up and play really well in the band with them. So I think the best we can hope for is to see another fourth Bill and Ted's movie. But who is good at coming up with ideas for sequels to movies that shouldn't exist? That's right. Bill and Ted 4 is going to be The Other Ones. That's the subtitle. And it's going to pick up in 1988/1989, and it's going to pick up with a ragtag group of individuals from throughout history just making their way through the 90s. How do they do it? Watch and see. That's all I got to tell you. That's the sequel that everyone wants.
So what historical figures can we count on for that?
Well, it's going to start off with all of the people we've seen in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, from the Socrates to Joan of Arc and beyond, and then Sigmund Freud and all. But what's going to happen, you see, is at some point, none of them want to return back to their times. They're perfectly happy being here in the future. But Billy the Kid's going to be like, you know what? I got the itch. I got to rob a bank. Like, I just have to do it. And then he gets arrested, of course, and... you know, yada, yada, yada. They find another time machine. And they're like, we can't break him out of this prison unless we go to Ocean's 11.
Oh,
and they
shit.
Hop to a different movie and grab Matt Damon from Ocean's 11 to grift the police officers. It's a new universe. You're welcome.
I'm stunned.
As all people should be. A silence falls across the universe. As one lonely angel descends from heaven with a bright golden ring and hands it to me for my accomplishment.
Amazing.
Yep. I mean, you didn't even see the angel because you're not recording here, but it was great.
Well, I'm going to take your word for it that there was an angel there.
As you seem to do fairly often. So
I mean, I don't have a lot of choice, John.
Yeah, it's one or the other. So, whew, that was amazing.
I did want to say the one of the sort of saving graces of this movie was the soundtrack.
Was that a saving grace?
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of funny.
I mean, there were parts of it that were funny, but there were also songs that I genuinely enjoyed. Like the In Time by Robbie Robb when they're in the future. Breakaway was good. Like there were just the whatever that song is that they're playing, or that Beethoven is supposedly playing in the mall.
That would be Play With Me by Extreme.
Play With Me by Extreme. Thank you. Like there
that's the only song I loved songs on that soundtrack. I mean, in the context of the movie, I thought they were fun and I was into it, but like, quote unquote, real life outside of the movie, I have no interest in any of it.
I think that they definitely had their place in the movie for sure. So we've been sitting here recording for 23 minutes almost. And everything that we've said has kind of swayed me a little bit. As much fun as I think that this movie is, and as much as I enjoy watching it, this is not a good movie.
It's not a good movie. No, it's not. But the funny thing is I don't think anyone involved in this movie would say it was a good movie.
No.
I think they were just having fun. You know, it was the whole background of this movie. It just started as a skit with a few people who were improv, and it evolved to the point where they just wanted to put on some kind of a variety show and feature. And then this one guy who the father of one of the screenplay writers who happened to, you know, write the book iRobot, not iRobot, that's Isaac Asimov. He wrote I Am Legend. He said, hey, this could be a movie. And then, you know, his son wrote it as a movie.
Really?
Yep.
I had no idea. I didn't even do that much research into the background of this movie.
Or I made it all up.
God damn it, John.
You'll never know.
No, I won't, because I'm not going to get around to like looking this up and verifying your facts.
Another fun fact, if you choose to believe or not, fair listener, is that they originally wanted, in the screenplay they were writing, the time machine to be a van. And then they were talked out of it because it was too much like Back to the Future. So they use a phone booth to travel through time, which has never been used before in media.
See, I believe that.
Yep, that one's true.
Listeners, distillers, we're going to start a new segment on this show called Fact Check John, where we're going to go back and read your comments because you guys are going to fact check John for me. So every time that John says something and I say, wow, that's fascinating, or wow, I believe you, I want you guys to fact check John and then write into facebook.com/thememorydistillery or thememorydistillery@gmail.com and call him out if he's wrong.
See, the funny thing about fact check John is it actually started in the Jaws episode. And we've been receiving emails from people since then. So this was an entirely superfluous comment from you.
Yes.
We have an email box full that you've never even looked at that is just was put in a subcategory where hundreds of people every week write in to be like, what is he saying?
I have to start reading those emails.
Yeah.
So that's all I got. Like,
because I've got a question.
Oh, good. I gave my opinion at first, so you go ahead and do the question portion then.
Yeah, switching it all up. It's like gravy. So, I'm not talking about a reboot of the movie. I'm not talking about a sequel. I'm talking about this exact movie, how we have it. You get to introduce one more character from history into the phone booth. Someone from any period in time that you think, given the cheesiness and the comedy involved in this movie, one personality that you think could be squeezed in for just a little bit more fun. And so that's the challenge. Who is that person going to be? I'll give you a second to think about it, and I'll tell you my pick.
Yes, please.
So, a flashback, and they're collecting all of these different individuals, and you're just thinking, this is a lot of fun, but when are we going to get a little more serious? When are we going to inventive? When are we going to kind of piece things together scientifically and get a little context this time travel? Who could lend just a few funny little quips and quotes tied to like
what you're gonna say now. Damn. Oh,
I've actually built three of these. So this is an older one or a new one and stuff. And it would be Nikola Tesla.
Oh, wow, you didn't go with who I thought you were going to.
And by Nikolai, I mean Nikola.
Nikola, yes.
But he's gonna pop up. They're gonna grab him accidentally because they think he's Thomas Edison. And he's going to have to kind of work through that. It's a little bit of a funny, wacky thing where it's not who they think they have. And, you know, he's going to be talking about, you know, like AC currents, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, he's going to bring up the fact that he's got like a spare time machine at home that they can use if this one's broken. And that's, it's going to just change up a little bit. Instead of fixing the antenna with gum, they go to his garage to get the spare time machine.
I like that a lot.
So just a little tweak.
Yeah, I think that I have to go with Albert Einstein in that case. Like, I feel like he's just the obvious plant.
Yeah, as soon as you said, I think I know what who you're going to pick, that's who I realized it sounded like I was setting up.
Yeah, because like,
no, I went with it, just a slightly different.
They grab Einstein and they're time traveling with him, and he's like, how are you doing this? I proved this was impossible. And they're like, dude, I don't know, dude. And, like, you know, hilarity ensues from there, but.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. There's some good material there.
There is. You could work at least 5 minutes of material out of that.
Einstein is definitely the more obvious joke that he would fit in with this film without any effort, because, you know, of course, having such a recognizable name that, you know, back in the 80s, Tesla pops up and, you know, they might take a little bit harder work to get people to appreciate that.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. Well, that's our episode, everyone. Thanks so much for listening and listening every week. We have new episodes every Monday, and you can catch us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, all those different podcast platforms. So come back every week and listen to us distill another favorite from our past.
Now, Anthony brought up an excellent thing that you might all want to check out, which is the motion picture soundtrack of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. But one person, one group, you're not going to find on that soundtrack, but it's still amazing to listen to, is the band Semaphore. Particularly the song Destroying the Evidence is one we love because we use it on our podcast every week, so check them out. And as always, please email us at thememorydistillery@gmail.com whether you want to call me out on all of my totally bogus claims that Anthony can't seem to figure out. I'm like a sneaky little chef hiding in the background, twiddling my mustache.
You're like a fact ninja.
I'm like a fact ninja. I'm running with my arms at my side right now. You can't see it. Anyway, I do want you all to write us in. And we've got the Halloween, the horror, the October movies coming up. I know a lot of you have already been voting on our first questionnaire as to what movie to go through. That's going to happen all October. So keep checking out Facebook so you can vote on which of the different movies that you're going to be hearing us reviewing coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. And actually, there's a poll up right now that John just mentioned that goes until tomorrow. And then once that's done, we're going to put up another poll for the following week. So if you want to get your votes in, make sure you do that. Facebook.com/TheMemoryDistillery. We've also been sharing them on our Facebook pages, so make sure you check those out. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Anthony Verneri.
And I'm John Deck.
And this has been The Memory Distillery. Most triumphant.
That's maybe my favorite line is Napoleon when they're doing the presentation at the end, and he's like, he's doing his little demonstration of the battle outlines, and they're like, oh, I don't think that's gonna work, dude. And he slams his thing and he goes, Napoleon de Triumph! Which is just great how he still is like, I win.
Yeah.